So, in the Tattva Bodha Prakaranam, we are now discussing the nature of the self. After the Anatma Vivaranam, Acharya is now talking about the definition of Atma. And after summarizing how one should view an Atma, just like how one views the belongings outside the physical body, the sadhaka should also learn to view his own physical body, sthula sharira, subtle body, sukshma sharira, and causal body, karana sharira, also as something that is belonging to me rather than myself. That is the summary of the Anatma Prakaranam, because they are not the Atma Vastu. Then in the beginning, Acharya gives the definition, Nitya Vastu, Ekam Brahma, Tat Sarvam, Tadvyatiriktam Sarvam, Anityam. So there is only one Nitya Vastu, that is Brahma or Atma. Then other than that Atma, everything else is Anityam Mithya. Tadanyat Sarvam Mithyeti is Mithya. Mithya that does not have the permanent reality. Now moving on to the definition of Atma, the question is Atma Tarhi Kaha. Then what is Atma? The definition is Satchidananda Swarupaha. Atma is of the nature of Sat, Chit and Ananda. Sat, Chit and Ananda is its only nature, Atma's nature. Once again, the emphasis is that Atma is not an object. We are extremely used to objectifying everything in our life. Anything that we would like to understand, we objectify. Whether we physically objectify or mentally objectify, we objectify. If we do not objectify something, our mental faculty finds it very hard to understand it. So if I describe a physical object to you, immediately you will think about it in terms of its dimensions. It has so much length, so much breadth, so much width, so much weight, so much volume, so much density. All this is perceivable by us when we see a physical object. So that is objectification. We think in terms of space, or we think in terms of time. Something existing in the past, in the present, in the future, in the distant future, in the near future, so on and so forth. We slice time into various different components and place this object in one of those time frames. So unless an object belongs to some point in the space-time continuum, our mind capacity is not capable of perceiving it. So that is why everything that we perceive, whether physically or mentally, is an object. But here, Atma is not an object. Anatma is an object. Sthula Shariram is an object. Sukshma Shariram is an object. Karana Shariram is an object. Panchakoshas are objects. Objects are nothing but matter. They are made up of matter. But Atma is not the object. Then what is Atma? Atma is the subject. The one that is watching everything and the one that is observing everything, perceiving everything, saying this is stula shariram, this is sukshma shariram, this is karana shariram, this is kosha panchakam, this is avastha trayam, these are the panchabhutas, these are the chaturvimshati tattvas, all these things. Who is doing this categorization? That who is the atma, the subject is the atma. In the previous class I told you, druk drishya vivekaha, drishyam, the entire empirical creation is drishyam, and the druk, the one that is seeing, is atma. That atma cannot be seen by anything else, because to be seen it has to be perceivable by our pancha jnanendriyas. That is one condition. Second condition is, to see atma there has to be another seer who is seeing it. And if you say the other one is the seer and this atma is the object, then who is the seer for the other seen object? Similarly, we'll just go into an infinite regression. Who is the seer for that? Who is the seer for that? Who is the seer for that? So on and so forth, we will get into an infinite loop. So this seer, one who is seeing, perceiving everything and saying this thing exists, I can see this thing, identifying, saying, I am able to perceive this, that is the seer, that is the one that who is seeing. And that seer has to be a conscious entity. The entire jagat is jadam. It does not have any consciousness of itself. No matter what you take the smallest of the smallest anus, or the atoms and molecules, or the biggest of the biggest galaxies, and everything in between, they are all essentially jadam. They don't have consciousness of themselves. But there is one consciousness that is able to perceive all these, and that is the conscious entity, and that entity does not need another consciousness to see it, because it has two types of consciousness. One consciousness is that it is perceiving this entire world, and another consciousness is that it knows it exists. I exist is the fundamental nature of the consciousness. Then comes the creation. The creation exists around me. The existence of creation around me only depends on my existence. If I don't even exist, how will I perceive the existence of the creation? So this conscious entity has two fundamental qualities: the perception of the existence of its own and the perception of the existence of the entire universe. And it does not need another conscious entity to validate that it exists. It can validate itself. It can validate itself, whereas the jagat cannot validate its own existence. The panchabhutas cannot say by themselves that they exist. The galaxies cannot say by themselves that they exist. Similarly, the trees, the rocks, the stones, the mountains, the rivers, the oceans, the entire earth, and down to the lowest of the lowest molecules cannot say that they exist. There has to be a conscious entity to to verify that they exist. And that same conscious entity should can also say that I myself exist. Without that conscious entity lending its consciousness, it is not possible for the jiva to perceive either itself or the world outside.
Guru, a small doubt here. So if that is the case, like when we say that unless our atma, our jivatma, cannot identify or acknowledge the existence of panchabhutas or anything. But in our Puranas or in our Vedanta, we assign our own devatas for each of these panchabhutas, right? So in one way, is it, we can say that, like, you know, in one argument, one says everything that is you as a human or atma has identified all these as devatas, versus those devatas already existed and we just rishis have identified and gave us, where by default we in general our astika sanatana dharma acknowledges that they exist as devatas. And isn't there a small contradiction here?
Okay, one. So, if I understand your question correctly, you are saying whether we know that something exists or not, before even that, our shastras say that this entire universe exists and the devatas there are the adhishtana devatas for each these entities in the universe. And they continue to exist, whether you exist or not. So before you come, they have existed. After you go, they will exist. And while you are there, they will also exist. So Shastra is saying that their existence is sort of proven before you can even perceive it.
Correct.
And Vedanta is saying, you are the one who is validating the existence of everything else. Right?
Yes.
So, that is the contradiction. Okay.
I mean, hope I make some sense there.
Yes, you definitely make sense. I will definitely answer this after a little bit. I don't want to into the answer right now. I will definitely answer this after a little bit when I talk about the consciousness.
Okay, no problem.
Okay.
But I just want to make sure that I ask the question while doing so that I don't forget it later. That's it. Thank you.
Yes. 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 Okay.
Guru, one question.
Yeah.
You mentioned about the consciousness that has two parts. One is the consciousness of the entire universe, and the consciousness of itself. So this same consciousness is acknowledging that rivers and the entire world exist. But isn't it true that the consciousness pervades those also, the rivers also?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But the expression of the consciousness in the rivers and the mountains and other jadapadarthas is not enough to express itself. Because without the Atmaswarupam being the underlying substratum, nothing can exist, is what Vedanta says. We are sort of jumping the gun here, because now we are sort of talking about the conclusion that everything that we see is just a modification of consciousness. I have not come there yet. Now I am only describing consciousness as something that can perceive. Okay. Assuming that there is an outside world, something that can perceive. But when we talk about the consciousness of the rivers, consciousness of the mountains, then we are sort of jumping into the conclusion that even for them to exist, there has to be the underlying consciousness.
Okay.
That is true. In the ultimate sense, that is true. But I have said earlier that consciousness can express itself at various different levels. For example, in a stone or a river or another inanimate being, the consciousness exists, but the expression of that consciousness is not there for it to sort of perceive everything else around it. So that expression is suppressed. Whereas in a living being, starting from amoeba, bacteria, so on and so forth, the expression slowly starts growing. As it becomes a small animal, a plant, a small animal, then a large animal, then in human being, the expression of this consciousness is full blown. So consciousness is present, but it is not expressing itself.
Okay.
In some entities, so, but it's only expressing itself in other entities.
So can we correlate it to the samashti rupa of Jagrat Avastha, which is a Virat?
Yes, absolutely. What you perceive in the Jagrat Avastha, the sum total of it is Virat.
Okay.
Sum total of it is the Virat. If you convert that into a Devata Swarupam, you call it Virat. The Samashti Atma, you call it Virat. But you can simply call it as the outside world also. The existing world in the Jagrat Avastha.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
I don't want to sort of jump the gun here and there. So let us try to stay on the definition. So the Satchidananda Swarupa Atma is the definition given by Acharya here in Tattva Bodha. Now, in the following definitions, we see what is Sat, what is Chit, and what is Anandaha. So Sat Kim Kalatrayepi Tishthati Iti Sat. What is Sat? Kalatrayepi Tishthati Iti Sat. That which remains unchanged in three periods of time, past, present, and future, is Sat. Sat simply means existence. Sat, Satyam, Satta, they're all synonyms. In Vedanta, whenever you come across these words, know that they are synonyms. Satta, Sat, Satyam, these are all synonyms. So, they simply means the existence, the principle of existence, pure existence, is its property, Atma's property. Let us see a little bit later why and how that is the property of Atma. Then second is consciousness, Chit. This is what we have been so far talking a little bit about. Chit, Kim, what is Chit? Chit means Jnana Swarupaha. The principle of knowledge or perception or jnanam, absolute knowledge, is called Chit. So this word Chit, you come across a lot of our religious texts also. Not only the Vedanta texts, you come across the Sat and Chit and Ananda, these three, in the description of various devatas. In the very first shloka of Lalita Sahasranamam, you get the Srimata, Srimaharagni, Srimat Simhasaneshwari, Chidagni Kunda Sambhuta. Chidagni Kunda Sambhuta. One who is born out of the Agni Kundam called Chit, consciousness. So that has a huge Vedantic meaning attached to it in Lalita Sahasranam. So Chidagni Kunda Sambhuta. That is Chit. Chidrupi Paradevata Bhagavati Shri Raja Rajeshwari Raja Rajeshwari Ashtakam. Chidrupi, she is called. So this word Chit, you come across a lot in a lot of stotras.
Yeah, and there also some Chitkala and Anandakalika, right?
Chitkala Anandakalika, same thing. So Sat also, similarly, you come across. Satyavratam, Satyaparantri, Satyam, Satyasya Yonim, Nihitancha Satye, Satyasya Satyam, Ruta Satya Netram, Satyatmakantvam, Sharanam, Prapanna. This is the shloka all the devatas do when Krishna is born, as soon as Krishna is born in the prison, all the Devi Devatas come to look at the marvel that happened, that they rush to the prison cell thinking that this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that they would never get to see again. This Parabrahman being born as a small boy in a prison cell. So they come as soon as Krishna is born and pray to him, calling him Satyasya Satyam. One who is the Satyam of the Satyam means one who is the Adhishtanam of the Satyam, that is Atma Swarupam. So Satyasya Satyam, Rita Satya Netra. Satyatmakam Tvam Sharanam Prapannaha. So this Sat also you see in so many stotras. Sat, Chit. Chit is the Jnana Swarupam consciousness. Then Ananda Kaha. What is Anandaha? Sukha Swarupaha, bliss, happiness. Absolute bliss or absolute happiness is Sukha Swarupaha. Evam Satchidananda Swarupam Swatmanam Vijaniya. To know that Atma to be the principle of existence, consciousness and bliss. So similarly, just like physical objects have length, depth and breadth, think of these three as the principles or the properties of Atma, because Atma does not have any physical properties. Now the question is, Why can't Atma have any physical properties? If Atma has physical properties, it is again subject to the birth and death of matter. If it is made up of matter, it has to be subject to the birth and death of matter. If it is subject to the birth and death of matter, then it cannot be the ultimate truth, because it comes in time and goes away in time. If that cannot be the ultimate truth, then it cannot be the seer. It becomes the seen. Since it is the seer and it sees the universe in the past, present and future, so you may ask, I don't see the universe in the past, present and future. I only see the universe right now. But lift it up, lift that level up to the level of Virat. The Atma of Virat, the consciousness of Bhagavan. We call Bhagavan as omniscient, one who knows everything. Not only everything, he knows everything that happened in the past, present and are going to happen in the future also. That is what we call as Bhagavan. So, at that level, Atma is all-seeing, ever-present. But if that Atma is subject to a matter, it becomes a material, then it won't be able to be called omniscient. And matter can also not be omnipresent, because as soon as you give it a length, a breadth, and a width, then it confines itself to one point in space. No matter how big it is, whether it is the galaxy or the sun or the atom, it occupies a certain amount of space and it cannot go beyond that. If it cannot go beyond that, it cannot be called Sarvagataha. It cannot be called omnipresent. If it cannot be omnipresent, then it can also be not called omniscient. If I am not present at some other place, how do I know what is happening at that place? So simultaneously, I have to be present in every single atom of this universe for me to be able to know what is happening in that place. So if something is limited by a length, breadth and width, it cannot be omnipresent, and consequently it cannot be omniscient also. So because we say Atma is omniscient and omnipresent, without which it cannot be called the ultimate seer, it cannot have any physical properties. It can also not be subject to past, present and future time. Because if Atma is present only in the past, it is not present in the present and the future. If it is present only in the present, it is not present in the past and the future. So that also goes back and contradicts the omnipresence and omniscience. So we have to, Acharyas have said, Atma is present always. So something that is present always in the past, present and future, something that is present everywhere in every single atom of the universe, and something that has the consciousness, the knowledge to know everything in the universe, that is the definition of this Virat. Virat Bhagavan, when we say Bhagavan is present everywhere, Bhagavan knows everything, Bhagavan knows everything in the past, present and future, how is it possible? If Bhagavan is one Krishna or one Shiva or one Brahma sitting in one place, it is not possible for that physical being to have all these properties of omniscience, omnipresence and omnipotence. Right? No matter how great that person is, it is not possible to see. And it is not just this universe. We call Bhagavan as Aneka Koti Brahmanda Janani. Not just one universe, Aneka Koti Brahmanda Janani. So many millions of universes are being born. If so many millions of universes are being born and Bhagavan has to take care of so many millions of universes at the same time, he cannot do that sitting in Vaikuntham. He cannot do that sitting in Kailasam. He has to be present in every single atom of every single universe at the same time, parallelly, in the past, in the present, and in the future, without which it is not possible for him to be omnipresent, omnipotent and omniscient. So if we take all these factors into consideration, then the essential nature of Bhagavan is that he does not have a physical form. Because limiting him to either a point in time or a point in space invalidates his omniscience, omnipresence and omnipotence. Now take that same concept to Atma. Since we can think about Bhagavan as omniscient, omnipotent and omnipresent, and we must conclude by those definitions that Bhagavan cannot have a single form, cannot be limited to a form, cannot be limited to a name, cannot be limited to a time, cannot be limited to a color. It is silly to say Bhagavan is only of this name, this form, this shape, this location. He is only present in Goloka or Vaikuntha or Kailasa. No, it is not possible for him to do that. So essentially, his original nature has to be formless, nameless, colorless, shapeless attribute, principle. That is Bhagavan. But if something is formless, shapeless, colorless, and it does not have any physical attributes, then how it is possible for him to do the things that he does? By these three properties, Sat, Chit, and Ananda. Sat, Chit, and Ananda. So now look, let's look at chit first. So chit we have talked about a little bit. So I want to make sure everybody understands very clearly the entire anatma vastus that we talked about cannot have consciousness of their own. They do not have consciousness of their own. No matter how great it is, they are, as long as it is a physical matter, even a mental thing like an idea, an emotion, a thought, they are still matter because they are in the subtle body which is made up of panchabhutas. So none of the entities in the anatma can either contain consciousness or produce consciousness. They cannot contain consciousness or they cannot produce consciousness. We have seen in many, many, many different ways we have done the analysis. Stula Sariram, we did the analysis. Sukshma Sariram analysis. Karana Sariram analysis. In all these we concluded it is not Atma. It is not Atma. It is not Atma. Why? Because they neither have consciousness or cannot produce consciousness. But here is the problem. The problem is that we see these objects appearing as conscious. We see other human bodies appearing as conscious entities. We see other animals appearing as conscious entities. We see plants appearing as conscious entities. Then how? Our experience says that all these are conscious entities, but Shastra is saying all these materials cannot be conscious. Then how do we resolve this discrepancy? In Vedanta, Acharyas give a beautiful example. You know that one of your friends is a very poor man, poor person. Even for day-to-day livelihood, he has to really struggle. But suddenly one day, he came fully decked in a beautiful suit and ornaments and jewelry and came to the wedding to which you have gone. What do you have to conclude by looking at him? He does not have a penny for himself, but he came fully bedecked with everything. Then what is our conclusion? Our conclusion is that for the wedding he borrowed all these things. For the wedding, he borrowed all these things. Similarly, Vedanta says all these entities are parading around with borrowed consciousness. They do not have a consciousness of their own. They are parading with borrowed consciousness. And who is lending that consciousness? Somebody who is a conscious entity only can lend that consciousness. If I myself am a penniless person, what jewelry and ornaments can I give to my friend? He has to borrow from someone who is rich. Similarly, all these bodies that are showing consciousness have to borrow their consciousness from some entity that is lending them consciousness. Just like you see an electric bulb fully aglow with light. And if the bulb says, I am the one who is producing light, it appears like that, but it is not the truth. The truth is that the electricity that is passing through is what is producing light. The bulb is just a medium for the electricity to express itself. So, all these bodies that we see that appear to be consciousness are running around with borrowed consciousness. Then who is the lender? Who is the ultimate lender of this consciousness? He should not be a borrower of the consciousness. If he is a borrower of the consciousness, then there has to be an ultimate lender. Otherwise, it becomes a Ponzi scheme. You borrow from someone, you lend to someone, that guy borrows from you, he lends to someone else, and that becomes a multi-level marketing. So there has to be someone who is not borrowing consciousness, but who has consciousness reserve within itself and is freely lending consciousness to all these objects. And that entity that possesses consciousness and that lends consciousness to all the physical bodies is called Atma. That is called Atma. And it is that consciousness that is not only lending the consciousness simply means what? Consciousness simply means knowledge. If something is a conscious entity, what is the difference between a conscious entity and a non-conscious entity? It knows that it exists. It knows that everything else exists around it. So that knowledge of knowing that I exist and knowing that everything else exists around me is consciousness. And the ultimate lender of that consciousness to this body is the Atma. That is why Atma is called Jnana Swarupaha, Chit Swarupaha, the nature of consciousness. Nature of consciousness. And I have already told you, Atma, because it is of the nature of consciousness and it lends its consciousness to every being in this creation, it cannot be a material entity itself. If it is a material entity, for example, like my phone that I possess, then if it is my phone, then it cannot be somebody else's phone. Similarly, if it is a possession like my phone, I may have it once, I may not have it once. I may possess it in the present, but not in the past. I may possess it in the future, but not in the present. So it cannot be limited to a particular time and particular space. So Atma cannot be of material nature. It is of the nature of pure consciousness. Pure consciousness cannot be perceived by the human mind or human organs of perception. It cannot be perceived. Why? Because consciousness is the perceiver, not the perceived. Anything that can be perceived by our human organs of perception and the mind are only the physical objects that have certain properties, either taste, smell, touch, color, sound, so on and so forth. And Atma doesn't have these properties. Atma is the perceiver, not the perceived. So, if it is the perceiver, not the perceived, is it ever possible for a human physical being with his mind or intellect or human body to perceive and know the Atma?
No.
Can I know the Atma like I know that a mountain exists in front of me? Can I see it? Can I smell it? Can I taste it? Can I touch it? Not possible, because it does not have a single property that is accessible to the physical body or the subtle body. It is not accessible to your thought. It is not accessible to your emotion. It is not accessible to your idea. It is not accessible to your memory. No, because it does not have any properties that our mind or the body can access. So it is not the accessible entity, it is the accessing entity. It is the perceiver, not the perceived. So it is not possible to perceive the Atma. It is only possible to what? Be it. We can only be the Atma. We can never know the Atma. Do you understand the difference?
Can you please explain it again? How can we be it?
Unless we are it, who is the it here? Who is saying I exist? Who is it? It is ultimately saying I exist. It has to be the conscious entity. The physical body cannot say I exist, right?
Right.
The mind cannot say I exist, right?
Right.
The intellect cannot say I exist, right? There has to be a conscious entity behind all these that should say, I exist. If that conscious entity is not there, intellect dies, mind dies, physical body dies. So it is the consciousness who will lend its property of consciousness to the physical body, and physical body becomes alive and it starts interacting with the rest of the world, and it perceives everything in the rest of the world. But pure consciousness, it cannot perceive. It only can perceive the expression of consciousness in the other human bodies or any other living entity. It can only perceive the expression of consciousness because our eyes can perceive shape, our nose can perceive sound, our mouth, tongue can perceive taste, and our ears can perceive sound, and our skin can perceive touch. That's all we can perceive. In this entire creation, there is only 5 things we can perceive, nothing else. And Atma expresses itself in various different ways. In the physical body of another entity, it expresses its consciousness as sound. Then you perceive that sound. It expresses itself as shape. Then you perceive that shape. It expresses itself as tactile perception. So you can touch it and experience it. But if those vishayas are gone, those physical entities are gone, the pure consciousness within that physical entity we cannot perceive. With our mind or intellect or physical body. Pure consciousness is not available for perception. Pure consciousness is, that's it. Is. That's all we can say. I exist. When I say I exist, after this physical body falls, the subtle body can say I exist. After the subtle body falls, Karana Shariram can say I exist. After the Karana Shariram also falls, it is the Atma Swarupam that can say I exist. But it can never be perceived by either the Stula Shariram or Sukshma Shariram or Karana Shariram. It can only be perceived by its expression through these Shariras. Do you understand the difference? Okay, I'll give you a simpler example. When the bulb is glowing, what is it that I perceive?
Electricity as light.
Electricity as light. But what is it that you actually perceive? Light or electricity?
Light.
Light.
Light. It is light that you perceive. Can you perceive electricity?
No.
No.
From the bulb, can you perceive electricity?
No.
No.
No. Without the electricity, can the bulb produce light?
No.
No, it cannot. Can you see the electricity behind in the bulb?
No.
No.
No. You can only see the expression of electricity getting converted into light, and you are able to see it. Now, if the bulb's filament is broken, can you see the light?
No.
No.
You cannot see the light. But at that point, can you say that no electricity is passing through the bulb?
No.
You cannot say it. You cannot say that no electricity is passing just because you don't see the light. It is only that at that point, since the filament is broken, electricity is not expressing itself as light. Once you fix the filament, it will start expressing as light. And just because it is not emitting light, you cannot say that if electricity is not flowing in the bulb. If you want to verify, there are other ways of verifying. And the most direct way is, take the bulb out, put your finger in it. So, electricity is flowing, that is not visible. Electricity is lending its energy to the bulb, and only then the bulb can produce light. Our body can only perceive light and not the electricity behind the bulb. And it is not the light that is producing the it is not the bulb that is producing the light. It is the electricity that is producing the light through the medium called bulb. If the bulb ceases to exist, electricity still exists. If the bulb ceases to exist, electricity still exists. Only thing is, it does not express itself anymore. It simply stays as electricity. Now, convert the same thing into Atma and Shariram. Atma expresses itself as consciousness in the human body, and we can see the expression of Atma in these bodies around us. When the body falls, it does not mean that the consciousness has gone. The consciousness, it just remains, but it is not expressing itself anymore because that medium is broken. It is a broken bulb at this point. So the electricity or the Atma does not express itself anymore. It'll go looking for another good bulb. So another new Sharira. A broken bulb does not mean that electricity ceases to exist. But even a good bulb needs electricity to show light, to display light. Without electricity, no matter how perfect the bulb is, light cannot be produced. No matter how perfect the body is, without consciousness, it cannot express the consciousness. The consciousness cannot be expressed without the presence of consciousness. So, we can only see the expression of consciousness, but never the consciousness itself. We can only see the expression of electricity, but never the electricity itself. Is it clearer?
Yes.
A little better?
A little better.
Okay. So, understand that there are two entities. One is consciousness, one is the three bodies, Sula, Sukshma, Karana, Shariras. When the connection is complete, this consciousness expresses itself through these three bodies. when the connection is broken, the consciousness remains, just like how electricity remains, but since the body is broken, it does not express itself. Similarly, just as we can see only the light produced by the bulb and not the electricity itself, we can only see the activities of other bodies showing as consciousness, but never the consciousness itself. So that is the consciousness part of the Atma. So Atma is not matter. Atma is of the nature of pure consciousness, pure knowledge, pure awareness. Chit Rupam. It is the ultimate lender of consciousness to everything else. Everything else in the physical universe is only running on borrowed consciousness, just like the bulb is glowing on borrowed electricity. It does not have any attributes of matter. It does not have any attributes of matter. This is where the similarity with electricity ends. We cannot take it to extreme, because there is a useful purpose for every example, and we have to stop there. It does not work in every single case. So, whereas electricity is nothing but a flow of electrons, here consciousness is not so. Consciousness is not of the nature of attributes of matter. It does not have any material attributes. It does not have any material attributes. Okay. We'll stop here and then we'll pick up the rest from the next class. Okay. Any questions before closing?
A few questions, Guruji.
Go ahead.
So, can Atma also be called as Brahmamu, Brahmapadartham and all?
Yes, it can be. Similarly, just like how we are calling the individual entities as Stula Sukshma Karana Shariras, and the combined capacity of these Stula Sukshma Karana Shariras as Virat, Hiranyagarbha and Ishvara, just like that, at the individual level you call it Atma, at the Samashti level you call it Brahma. That's it. It's only the level at which you are looking at it.
Okay.
That is the difference.
And once that Ananda, which is the knowledge, is attained, then Atma is basically Paramatma, which means both are the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
At that point, there is nothing to experience. There is only the experience of existence, consciousness and bliss, which is the essential nature of Atma.
Okay.
We will go into details of what that experience means. What does that experience mean when we say one can experience the Satchidananda Atma and be happy? What does that mean? We don't know what that means at this point. We will talk about it later.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Anyone else? Okay. We'll stop here then. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryangaravavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. Sarvam Shri Sadguru Charanaravinda Arpanamastu.
Namaskar.
Namaskar.
Thank you.
Thank you.